Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the bowels of the legislature in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Class size, pipeline funds, court rulings, court filings, executive powers, Gen X, Mickey Michaud retiring, Lee Lilly gets ambushed, and 3 days from now, on top of all of this in this chaotic week, an election effectively begins with candidate filing. Hey now, deep breath. Lauren Horsch of The Insider is here to maybe make some sense of it and talk about it. Hi, how are you?
I'm tired. How are you, Jeff?
I'm tired too. I said to somebody, this was as chaotic a week as I remember in the 3 years I've been here. And it was like a buffet of sorts. It was just all over the place.
Yeah, it was weird. I'm still new here. So my chaotic time was last December 2016,
yeah,
when we had all those special sessions, mm-hmm, right on top of each other. But yeah, this is just bizarre and weird and exhausting and just one thing after another.
Crossed my mind this morning. I thought maybe, you know, paging Greg Murphy, could we get a poem about this week? Could he write one of his exceptional poems about everything that transpired this week? Give me the biggest story of this week. And I don't think I left out any of the big ones in what I just said, but what was the biggest thing that happened this week?
I want to say the biggest thing, just in sheer what the heck just happened, is the ambush of Lee Lilly, Governor Cooper's new legislative affairs director.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened during a House and Senate joint appropriations meeting. And that was interesting because it's not only tied to, you know, this mitigation fund for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline.
Right.
But also it's tied to this, you know, omnibus bill we had this week, the, mm-hmm, the House Bill 90,
yep,
which was, you know, funds for class sizes and, you know, the election board changes. So it all tied together and it kind of culminated in, you know, what, you know, a staffer told me was going to be fireworks.
Right. And I think it's interesting to pull the curtain back just a little bit and note, I think we both heard about it Wednesday night and or early Thursday. It was like, hey, make sure you're in this committee meeting at 2:00 on Thursday because there are going to be fireworks.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily get, I should speak for myself, I don't normally get tips like that. It's like, hey, make sure you're there because this is going to be a spectacle more or less.
Well, especially not for committee meetings.
Right.
I'm in a lot of committee meetings. That's
right.
What I mainly do every day here at the General Assembly. And no one ever calls me and is like, yeah, that committee meeting sounds like a good idea, right?
Right.
No. It's like, oh, this is going to be really boring. Why
right.
are you here?
So a little bit of background. I think a lot of people listening are familiar with this. But for those who are not, various state agencies, government outlets have folks who are effectively legislative, mm-hmm, liaisons. And Lee Lilly is Governor Cooper's new liaison to the legislature. He's also a former petroleum lobbyist.
Mm-hmm.
And this all happens on the heels of permitting for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline and this $57.8 million mitigation fund that you mentioned. So Lilly shows up with, is it fair to say, a little bit of baggage or a little, baggage might be too strong a word.
I would maybe say baggage.
Okay.
And you got me to say baggage, which is my bad word. But because he has been a lobbyist for Dominion in the past,
mm-hmm,
on federal issues, and Dominion is one of the companies involved in the pipeline.
Right.
So, you know, maybe it isn't baggage. Maybe it's just, you know, I don't, just some yucky, icky feelings about it because it did happen right on the heels of the permitting and,
uh-huh,
the mitigation fund. And I mean, he's only been here as of today, 6 days. He
right.
was 5 days in yesterday.
Yeah.
But he was also announced with little fanfare. We didn't really know about it. It wasn't really released until another media source, I do believe WBTV in Charlotte, kind of found out about it.
I think they scooped the governor's office on
that. Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
So there was no fanfare about this dude whatsoever until he was told to come to this appropriations meeting and meet everyone.
Yeah. And then he he was met. Then he was reminded that I think Senator Harry Brown, Majority Leader, Republican from Onslow County, said, you're obligated by law to answer our questions.
I think he said he was under oath.
Under oath.
I do believe it was the use of under oath, because that was an odd way to start the day.
So this was certainly a spectacle. Republican lawmakers started firing questions at Lilly about the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, about his involvement, about the mitigation fund. Democrats were incensed. At least some of them were incensed. Darren Jackson said it was one of the worst things he's seen in 10 years.
I would say a lot of the Democrats were not happy. I mean, right. I was sitting closest to Darren Jackson, so I saw all of his facial expressions. But you also had Senator Bryant, Angela Bryant, a Democrat from Nash County, who was really upset about it, too. And she was trying to get in some questions as well. And you heard Representative Mickey Mishaw, Democrat from Durham, as well as Greer Martin, Democrat from Wake County. Right. They all kind of got in on it and were like, why are we doing this?
So, to be fair, it's not just the Democrats who are ticked. The Republicans were previously ticked because of this mitigation fund. So, setting this up, obviously some of this was the theater of the moment. That moment was clearly political theater. But this is born out of this mitigation fund. Mm-hmm. Let's chat a little bit about this $57.8 million mitigation fund, virtually the same amount that Virginia Governor Northam and former Governor McAuliffe negotiated as part of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline coming from West Virginia through Virginia down into North Carolina. On one hand, or on Cooper's I'm not making arguments for either side, but, his position is this is a fund that's going to help with some of the deforestation that's going to take place, could deal with some of the water quality issues that might arise out of having this pipe go across the state of North Carolina through eight counties. On the other side, you've got the Republicans, who pounced quickly on this, and understandably so, saying this was A, a slush fund, and B, illegal for the governor to do because it violates the Constitution. He can't appropriate money.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, it's what the heart of the anger.
It's at the core. Yeah. But it's, this mitigation fund, there's also a memo that was created by some nonpartisan staff here at the urging of some legislative leaders. I'm not quite sure which leaders, but I did confirm that House leaders got this memo.
Okay.
But basically, we don't even know if this, there's a memorandum of understanding, what's called an MOU, that goes along with this mitigation fund. And no one quite knows if this is legally binding.
Right.
So there's a lot of questions of, not only, this is a quote unquote voluntary mitigation fund, but if the permits aren't done correctly or they lose permits, the money has to go back. And
right.
So there was the big hangups of it's voluntary, but you have to give the money back if you don't do X.
Right.
And so there's a lot of concerns about, who gets to appropriate the money. Because again, under Constitution, appropriating money is the General Assembly's job, not the governor's.
Right, bicameral ledge. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's there's a lot of confusion and I think a lot of anger there because, these memorandum of understandings are sometimes done in backroom deals because we don't get to see it out in the public.
Sure.
We don't know what's coming. And, the day the MOU was released, I think almost immediately legislative leaders were like, well, what about us? What do we do now?
Right. Where are we? Are we chopped liver
yeah.
now? And you can understand, and I haven't heard anybody from the governor's staff say this directly, but you can understand the frustration out of the executive branch because the governor of North Carolina is inherently not that powerful. And then you mentioned kind of the chaos you walked into when you started here, those special mm-hmm. sessions. The legislature here removed some of his powers. I can only imagine how frustrated the governor is. That's not to say what he did is good or bad, but just to say I think that's probably some of the fuel, some of the motivation for doing this. So, all right, we've got the pipeline mitigation fund.
Yeah.
House Bill 90, which you mentioned off the top, to me it's got three key pillars. It's got the mitigation fund. Two is election and ethics. And just bring us – and this is another controversial mm-hmm. provision, I would contend. Tell us a little bit about – that component of this bill, if you're comfortable doing so.
Yeah. So harkening back to December 2016, there was a bill that changed. We used to have two separate boards, like the ethics board and the state board of elections. So that bill essentially combined the two to create a bipartisan board of ethics and election.
Right.
Ethics and election enforcement. And it was eight members. So four Democrats, four Republicans. And I think you would need like a five-person majority to
maybe a six.
Five or six.
Yeah.
Something like that. Something which seems a little bit odd to have an even number board for some of us who have covered government boards before. But that's been in the courts for a little bit. And it was recently ruled that, you know, what was it, the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, you kind of struck down some of that previous iteration of it, that 8-person board.
Right.
So what they did is they took House Bill 90 and slipped in a provision that would change it to a 9-person board, where you would still have 4 Democrats, 4 Republicans, and then that 9th member could be either an unaffiliated person or someone from a third party,
right,
to kind of help all that go down.
And an interesting wrinkle, that 9th person, at least as I read the bill yesterday, would be chosen by those 8. So those 8 would have to pick the 9th. And you could imagine a scenario under which those 8 might not agree on a 9th. So this election ethics thing is another pillar of House Bill 90, which mm-hmm. we saw this week. And just one other piece of context, I don't think you mentioned this, but if you did, then I'm repeating you. Governor has had control over the State Board of Elections for about 100 years, I believe.
Yeah.
It's a 5-member board that reflects the governor's party, and then there are county boards of elections that reflect the governor's party that are 3-member
boards. 3 members, yes.
So those two things found their way into House Bill 90, and you certainly could expect the governor to go, no way, I'm not signing a bill that has those two things in it. That's not legislation he would like. Well, then the third pillar of House Bill 90 is something that a lot of people have been calling on for a while. It deals with this class size maximum. Give us some of the details there.
Well, so I'm sure all of you, like those of you listening, have heard about this class size chaos where we have classrooms that are shrinking, but we don't have enough teachers or enough space. And this is threatening what some people call the specials, the art classes, the PE classes, the music classes. So what Republican leaders did in House Bill 90 was they decided to phase in these lower class sizes because it was originally set to start in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this coming August or September, whenever school starts. So that instead is going to phase in over 4 years.
Right. And they also provided funding, right?
Yes. Yeah. And with that, there's also $61 million funding each year of that phase in. But this is when we tie back that mitigation fund from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So in House Bill 90, that $58 million mitigation fund would now go to the 8 counties. So there's 8 counties that have the Atlantic Coast Pipeline coming through it in North Carolina.
Right.
So that money would instead go to the school districts in those 8 counties.
So we've got this bill, a loaded bill. This is a loaded baked potato, right? Like I say, I'd like a baked potato with cheddar cheese, sour cream, and obviously some bacon on it. And you go, let's drop on some peanut butter and give me something else just disgusting. It wouldn't go on a potato.
Horseradish.
Now, you might find somebody that wants to eat that baked potato, but he ain't living in the executive mansion, right? So we have this bill, and I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens when it gets over to Cooper.
Yeah.
Because if today's any indication, the bill passed out of the Senate 36-5, maybe?
Yep.
Yeah, overwhelming support. We're expecting votes in the House beginning Tuesday, probably Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yep.
Then it goes to Cooper. So the way I look at this, and I'm interested to hear how you look at this, is he's in a real tough spot for a number of reasons, because if he vetoes it, they're going to the Republicans will crush him for voting against this fix to the class size issue. If he sues over the election board issue, and remember he sued, as you spoke about, that previous election ethics merger. If he sues on this one and he were to win, it undoes potentially the whole bill. So they could hammer him for that. So they've put him, I think, as 2 Republican staffers told me yesterday, we've put him in a really narrow box, or a really small box, is the way they put it. What does he do here?
I ain't the governor. I don't know what he's going to do. But it's incredibly hard to think what he would do. And I think it was someone, one of the Republicans in the press conference yesterday when they rolled out House Bill 90, you know, they said, you know, maybe the governor should just let this become law without signing it.
Yeah.
And he does have that option. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has, you know, X amount of days to sign a bill or veto it. But if he doesn't sign a bill or veto it, it does just become law without his signature. And he's done that before in some bills that were
not with a ton of frequency, but
just, I want to say, a handful or less.
Right.
So he's done it before, and we very well could see this again. And that might be, you know, if I was a Democratic strategist, I might say, oh, that's pretty much advantageous, because then you're saying, well, I didn't approve it, but I also didn't veto it. But I think Republicans, no matter what, will have their talking points about, oh, well, he didn't even want to come out strong about class size, or he didn't want to, you know, do this or that. Like,
right.
It's a no-win situation for him.
Lauren Horsch is the guest here on the WNC Politics Podcast. She writes for the NC Insider. We're chatting on a Friday afternoon. She'll be recording Domecast, which is the Insider News and Observer Politics podcast, which you can check out as well on iTunes and Google Play. And you and I are about 15 minutes into a swift conversation. There's a junk load of stuff we're not going to get to because we're not going to talk for an hour and a half. Aside from what we have been talking about and what was kind of this messy week here at the General Assembly, what was the story that just didn't get enough play or hasn't gotten enough play or credit or attention thus far as we chat about quarter to two on a Friday?
There's just so many. Okay, the court, I mean, I swear we get a new court decision daily. This just came out, you know, right before we got into the booth. But I think we're going to get more attention to judicial primaries,
right,
which had been ruled that, well, they were a law was passed that we wouldn't have to do judicial primaries
by the Republicans back in the
fall. Yeah. And the courts had recently stepped in saying, no, you got to do the primaries, right?
At least for the statewide races.
Yes, for statewide races.
Court of Appeals, State Supreme Court.
Yes. Yeah. But now, just today, we got the next ruling that says, no, we don't need those primaries. So it's filing starts on Monday.
Right. So today's ruling comes from the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond. And we expect, I don't know this at the moment, my expectation is that plaintiffs who successfully challenged in the Middle District and got a favorable ruling from Judge Catherine Eagles will now take their case or will now seek an immediate relief from Justice Roberts at the U.S. Supreme Court. I'd just like to note that some sympathy goes to the way of Associated Press reporter Gary Robertson, who will probably be stuck in his cave here in the legislature a little bit later on this Friday because he'll be monitoring that.
Yes, he will. Bless you, Gary. We love you for what you do.
All kinds of happenings. I do want to ask you briefly, maybe not briefly, but I do want to ask you about Mickey Mishaw, who announced on the House floor that he is retiring, will not seek re-election in 2018. Mishaw is a longtime member of this body. He was the third ever African-American to be elected at the General Assembly, and he's got just a trove of political stories, civil rights stories. I grew up outside of Boston. I'm a huge Celtics fan, and there's a guy by the name of Sam Jones who won 11 titles with the Celtics and happened to overlap at NC Central with Mishaw. Mm-hmm. So Representative Mishaw has told me just some great stories about meeting Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell, and I'm a basketball junkie, but he has some great basketball stories. You covered government in Durham. You're a Durhamite.
Yep.
You've known Mishaw for years. You've interacted with him for years. Give me a Mickey story or two if you've got one.
I mean, I don't have any like Mickey story that sticks out in my mind, but obviously it's like every time he stands up on the House floor, you have to stop and listen. And Republicans will tell you that too. He is the elder statesman. He's the dean of the House of Representatives, and he's 87, and he's still eloquent, as I assume he was in his younger years. In Durham, he's this legend. I mean, he talks about, you know, when Martin Luther King came to Durham, he stayed with his family, with Mishaw's family. It's just everything he says is just dripping with history and just this incredible, you know, power of, you know, this happened in the 60s and he still can remember it. He's whip smart. He probably remembers every meal he ever ate. Like, this man is incredible. And everyone in Durham loves him. He's just revered. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens next. But I mean, I sit up on the House floor is I sit on the Democratic side. And since he's the longest serving member, he obviously sits right near me. So it's just funny to hear some of his comments. Or I think always my favorite thing he does is he'll slouch down in his chair and all of a sudden you'll see him go into his pocket and bring out his constitution, his pocket constitution. And then he'll just open it up, thumb through it, put it back. And then occasionally, I've seen him do this once or twice, he would get up from his seat and go grab a House rules book to like thumb through the rules and check. And then he would call someone out on being, you know, against the rules. And
the rules of the chamber.
Yes.
I've heard it both ways. Mishaw or Mishaw?
I say Mishaw. I don't know if I'm right. I don't know if I'm wrong.
I've got a few Mickey stories. I'll tell just one quickly, which is, In 2014, there was a trial pertaining to the North Carolina, the election law, the big House Bill 589 that passed out of here in July of 2013. But there, and this was, it's called the voter ID law, but it, you know, it dealt with early voting and same day registration, a number of other provisions. But Representative Mishaw testified there in either late July or early August of 2014. And at the time, I wasn't covering this beat,
but he was there. I covered that case. I interviewed him. And then it was 2.5 or 3 years later. And I'd had some interactions with him in this building. I had since been reassigned here, but not like necessarily anything one-on-one. And I was looking for him, and I found him in the hallways here on the House side. And I walked up to him, and I was like, "Hey, excuse me, Representative, do you have a minute?" I was like, "I don't know if you remember me." And he just cut me off. He goes, "Courthouse, Winston-Salem." And it was legitimately, it was 2.5 to 3 years later. And he was in his mid-80s. And I was like, I was amazed. I'm not a memorable person. It was like, good Lord, like this. I don't think he necessarily has a photogenic memory, but his memory, I mean, he is, you said whip smart. His memory is like intimidatingly sharp. Yeah. So Mickey Michaud will be not running for re-election. Any 2 cents on who may run for that seat? You're shaking your head. It's an unfair, it's
I have no idea, and I'm not going to call people out in Durham politics. Y'all can figure it out on your own.
Yeah, no, that's a messy game to play with. That's not a curveball that will be fun. Maybe this one is. Winter Olympics starting, I mean, I guess they started yesterday in South Korea, because now it's in Pyeongchang, it's Saturday. But I want to know if you could play any sport in the Winter Olympics, what would it be?
I wish I was graceful enough for figure skating, but I have done some curling in a previous job where I had to cover some curling, and I really like it. It's a good leg workout, so I would do curling.
Curling. All right. Hear that a lot out of people. I feel like there's this like cult following around curling.
Also, the pants. The pants are cool, too.
The pants are awesome. One sport that you, if you were going to cover the Winter Olympics, what's the one sport you would want to cover? Spend 3-4 days following it, writing about it.
Probably the bobsled or the luge or whatever that is. Like, bobsledding teams are very interesting to me, and I do that.
Okay. There is a, I believe there's the first ever African bobsled team in this year's Olympics. And I just learned this morning. First time that women were able to compete in the bobsled, take a guess at what year? In the Winter Olympics. I mean, I can't speak to like international events.
I would have to say it was in the 90s because I don't remember when.
2002, Salt Lake City. And I read that this morning. I thought, I had no idea. And obviously pretty recent. How much of the Olympics will get you out of here on this one? Will you actually watch? Do you carry you into it? Or
I love the Olympics. Nice. Me and my friends in college used to, like in the summers and in the winter, we would watch it all the time. It would always be on our TV. So I'm going to try and watch as much as I can. But I have another avid sports TV watcher at home, so he might object.
I'm from New England. You're from Minnesota. Do you find that being from a cold weather place makes you more inclined to view the Winter Olympics?
I don't know, because I'm also very excited for the Summer Olympics.
Okay.
But I also think it's cool to just see people out and about in snow and feeling happy, because most of the time people are in snow, they're absolutely miserable. So,
Lauren Horsch of The Insider. She's been here on the WNC Politics podcast before. Hopefully you'll come back again. Thanks for chatting about everything or some of everything that happened this week.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
And we'll leave you with a quote this week. It's from Tom Normanly. Tom said, "If you don't like what you do, don't do it. And if you do, try to have some fun doing it." Tom Normanly is a videographer. Well, I guess he's no longer a videographer with WREL. He's moving over to take a job with the state in cultural resources. He's a mainstay in the press room. He works with Laura Leslie and Travis Fain. He's hauling around equipment regularly. But I said this morning, and I sincerely meant it. He's one of the few people that I see regularly in this building where it's like, this guy makes me smile. Like, he's just got a great energy.
So he and I usually sit together in the House floor, and so I'm really going to miss him.
100%. If you don't like what you do, don't do it. And if you do, try to have some fun doing it. Tom Normanly, it's been fun. We'll see you somewhere soon, hopefully. For Lauren Horsch, I am Jeff Tiberi. Thank you for listening. Tune in to the WNC Politics Podcast on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher. Stay up to date on whatever is happening next week and in the weeks to follow within the North Carolina political community at our website, wunc.org. Enjoy your weekend and those Winter Olympics.